Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the New Energy Experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the episode. Today, we're going to the Netherlands. And the context of why we're going to the Netherlands is electrification of heat. The Netherlands is a country that's, I think, at the forefront of the move to increasing electrification of heat across Europe. And we'll be looking at how two companies are responding to this. Two interesting dimensions of this will be the move from just selling products or letting a product drop into the market to selling services or having an ongoing relationship with customers. And the second element will be digitalization and connectivity and how these are enabling services around the electrification of heat to develop in the Netherlands. And we've got two great guests who will join us and share their experiences together, as usual, with our Delta EE expert. So without further ado, let me introduce my guests. First of all, Hayes Dippendal, who is a technology and innovation manager at Eneco. Eneco is one of the three big energy companies in the Netherlands. Hello, Hayes.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be on the show.
Great, well, thanks for joining us. To help listeners understand where you're coming from, can you describe in a nutshell your role at Eneco? What is it you're doing and how that relates to electrification of heat?
My role is to develop new business models for Eneco. Eneco is an energy supplier, and our core business is, of course, selling energy. But we're looking for new business models for Eneco with a long term, for a long term sustainable relation with our customers. Energy is changing, so we're in the middle of the energy transition, and Eneco is building new models for the longer term with our customers.
Great, and we're looking forward to hearing about those models that are focusing on heat shortly. My second guest is Albert Stoffer. Now, Albert also has a job title innovation, so innovation manager at a company called Etho Douderop, which is well known in the Netherlands, I think, Albert, but maybe a bit less well known in some European countries. So welcome to the podcast.
Hello, John. Hello, Kate.
And could you help us understand a bit more about Etho Douderop and what your role is there?
Yes, please. Etho Douderop is a company which supplies products mainly for households, which are taking care of heat, domestic hot water, and ventilation. And my personal role in this organization nowadays is innovation manager. So quite a lot of the products we sell, we develop ourselves. And of course, we have quite some people to do that, given the fact that we have products in all three of the elements I just mentioned. So heat, ventilation, and domestic hot water. And we focus within those product ranges quite a lot on the renewable products like heat pumps, for example.
Okay, great. We'll come back to Hayes and Albert shortly to hear more about the two things they're focusing on. To give you a sneak preview, one is heat as a service, or more specifically, comfort or warmth as a service. And from Albert, not only selling heat pumps, but guaranteeing the performance of heat pumps.
Yes.
Now, my last guest, is my colleague, Kate Leon, here from Delta EE. Hello, Kate.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on today.
And thanks for joining. So, Kate, you look at our research on electrification of heat mm-hmm. across Europe. And I said in my introduction, the Netherlands is at the forefront of this. Can you just give a bit more depth and colour to that? So how is heat being electrified across Europe? At what rate? Mm-hmm. And where does the Netherlands sit compared to other countries?
Yes, happy to do that. Thanks, John. As you say, I manage our electrification of heat service, and across the heat services at Delta, we look at the major heating markets. We see how the transition to new energy is changing those markets, what's coming along in terms of new products, new services, and how is the energy mix in a lot of these markets changing? So the Netherlands, as you said, it's one of the smaller of the markets that we look at in terms of heating sales and volumes, but it's a really interesting one because it's really kind of leading in terms of this move away from fossil fuels like natural gas and putting more and more emphasis on electrification.
Why is that? What's driving this in the Netherlands?
So a couple of reasons, and a lot of countries across Europe now have targets around reducing emissions of carbon dioxide mm-hmm. and moving towards electricity, and renewable electricity is a good way of achieving that. But the Netherlands in particular has been taking a really strong stance on phasing out natural gas after a series of earthquakes in the north of the country that have been caused by natural gas extraction.
And that's quite interesting because the Netherlands is famous really for being a gas country for decades on the back of its gas reserves. So that's quite a shift.
Yeah, definitely. It will be a big change. Similar to the UK, the Netherlands, as you say, has been a country that's been dominated by gas heating for a very long time. Sort of 85-90% of homes at the moment use natural gas as their main heat source.
So I said the Dutch are at the forefront. Are they leading, would you say, when it comes to electrification of heat? Are they one of the leaders? How do they compare to the other big markets like Germany or France or UK?
So they're definitely a leader in terms of new build. Mm-hmm. So the Netherlands in 2018 passed a law that means the presumption on any new build house is that it will no longer get a connection to a gas network. Mm-hmm. In most circumstances, there are some exceptions. And they've also been ramping up the support that they offer in terms of subsidies and legislation to help retrofit the other really big sector that needs tackled to help that move towards electrification as well.
And I always think new build is actually relatively easy. If we can't decarbonize new build, then we don't have much hope with a huge challenge that's retrofit. Mm. That's a really hard part. That's where all the emissions are. Progress in retrofit compared to new build, you explained that legislation for new build. Is retrofit moving yet or is it starting to move?
I'd say retrofit's starting to move, definitely. Mm. And the Netherlands has quite a good structure in terms of putting obligations on social housing, and there's a lot of social housing in the Netherlands, makes up a bigger chunk of the housing stock there than some of the other markets we look at. So legislation to encourage social housing providers to move away from natural gas, help homes disconnect. New build is kind of where most of the emphasis still is. Mm. And that's similar to, we're seeing that developing now in other markets in Europe as well. So seeing, for example, proposals from the UK, from the Republic of Ireland, from certain parts of Belgium as well, that they might follow the Netherlands down this route of banning gas connections in new build.
Okay.
So Netherlands has really kind of led the charge on the new build front.
And my last question before we come back to Gijs and Albert, are the Netherlands purely following the electrification route, or are there other solutions? We've seen hydrogen become a bigger topic in many markets, for example, heat networks. How do you see that in terms of focusing on electrification or a breadth of solutions?
Yeah, that's a really good question, John. So I think when the ban on gas in new build was brought in, there was kind of this assumption that everything would move to being electric and probably high efficiency, so heat pumps. Mm-hmm. I'd say that the narrative's probably moved on a little bit in the last couple of years. There's definitely an increased interest in whether district heating can meet some of that new build connection need. Mm-hmm. Renewed interest, I think, in biogas in some of the more rural areas. And as you say, there's kind of a growing interest in potential for 100% hydrogen networks in specific pockets in the Netherlands. So similar to how we're seeing in the UK, the new build picture is by no means guaranteed to be 100% electric, although I think we'd expect a good proportion of it to be mainly electric. Yeah.
Great. Thanks for that context, Kate. Gijs, I'd like to come back to you now at Eneco. Can you tell us about this heat as a service or comfort as a service proposition you've developed? If I'm a customer, what does it look like? What can I get from Eneco?
The biggest difference compared to the traditional energy bill is that we now sell the product and not the kilowatt hours. So we make a promise to a tenant for a fee per month. They have a bundle of energy, so they can have a comfortable home temperature of 20 degrees for a fixed fee per month. And they have a bundle for a hot shower water every day, 180 liters. So the biggest difference is we sell comfort instead of kilowatt hours.
That's quite a change. It's quite a step. What Tell me a bit about what drove you to doing this and how that started. Where did the ideas come from, or was it obvious this is the way you had to go, or has it taken a few years to find your way to this point?
In this group of tenants, it's social housing, so an unpleasant surprise on the energy bill is a big issue. So we searched for a model without unpleasant surprises on the energy bill. So we have a monitoring system, so the tenant can see what he's doing and how he's compared to his neighbors. And of course, we have a legal framework, the EPV, the energy performance fee. That's a legal framework, so the investment can be earned back for the house owner. So the house owner, a heat pump, is of course a much bigger investment compared to a gas-fired boiler.
So when it goes making that investment in the heat pump, it's you're monitoring that heat pump. Is Eneco also controlling the operation of that heat pump to deliver the comfort that the tenant needs, or is the tenant controlling the heat pump's operation?
Both. Of course, the tenant needs to be on the steering wheel for his room temperature, but also for his hot water. But Eneco has also control because we pay the energy bill. The electricity used for the heat pump is connected to a secondary electricity meter connected to Dutch wind energy. So we deliver clean energy to the heat pumps, and we are steering to have a good performance on the heat pump. So the output, the comfort, is for the tenant, but he's also, if he wants 21 degrees or 22 degrees, of course he can change that, but the bundle is for 20 degrees.
Okay. How does so to be clear, this is mainly, or is it only for tenants in social housing at the moment?
At this moment, we have a project for social housing because the legal framework, the EPV, is only for social housing at this moment. And we have our first pilots, 61 tenants in Utrecht, with this solution, comfort as a service.
Okay. Can you see if this is successful? How widely would you roll it out? Would it, do you think, just be social housing? Would it be new build and retrofit? Would it be private housing as well?
Yes, a lot of questions, but we're in the middle of the pilot, and after this winter, we will have more insights in the behavior of the customer, the energy performance of the heat pump, and things like that. And we're aiming on a bigger market for comfort as a service, of course.
Okay, and I guess that learning, that those sort of things you'll learn, the behavior of the tenants, the performance of the heat pump, that all relates to the risk that Eneco is taking. For a customer, it's a beautifully simple proposition. For Eneco, there's a lot of complexity for you to manage and potentially a lot of risk. So has that been hard to deal with, or tell me a bit about how you've approached those risks, or how you manage those risks?
No, it's worth the risk because a new business model always takes risks. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we have a very good monitoring system, so the tenant can see what he's doing. We can see what the tenant is doing. So we support and we coach the tenant to be sustainable and change his behavior. So we're coaching the tenant because he moved from a home with a gas-fired boiler and he could shower all day if he wanted. But and in his new house, he can only shower for half an hour. If he wants more, that's possible. He can ask a secondary load of hot water, but it's outside of the bundle. So we coach the tenant and give him insights to prevent unpleasant surprises on the energy bill in the end of the year.
Okay,
and so I think that's the biggest change for energy as a service, the user behavior and the change in mindsets to be sustainable.
So in my introduction, I talked about data and connectivity, and presumably there's a huge amount of data you're getting And there's a lot for you to work out in terms of analyzing that data, working out how to coach the tenant, working out how to manage the heat pump operation. So have you got a big data science team, or how have you been approaching the huge amounts of data and then what to do with that data?
Yes, we have a very big data science team, and we have a lot of experience with Tone. Tone is a smart thermostat from Eneco. We have more than 350,000 Tones installed in the field with our customers. So what we learned there, to coach our customer and to see the energy insights, we used it for the pilot comfort as a service as well, of course.
Hmm. Okay. Heinz, there's lots more I'd like to ask you, but I'd like to move to Albert now and what Albert's doing at EtherDowDrop, and then we'll come back and have a wider discussion. So, Albert, EtherDowDrop's a product manufacturer, and if I generalize, heating product manufacturers traditionally have been very good at making a box, and then their main business model has been dropping that box into the market through wholesalers. Installers pick up that box and install it with a customer, and you don't have any ongoing relationship with the customer. So that's not universally true across every heating appliance manufacturer, but that's how I'd generalize the industry. Can you tell us a bit about what you're doing then with heat pumps, and how you're having this ongoing relationship or interaction with a heat pump?
Of course. I think you exactly pinpointed the big change we also as a company went through, because from, as you mentioned it, dropping a product into the market, we now have become active sellers of the products, including all of the services which go along. And EtherDowDrop is part of the Climate for Life group. And within that group, we also have other companies which sell these services. And one of them is Klimaatgarant, as we call it. And if you know a bit of Dutch, then that actually means that we guarantee the comfort more or less in the house. So meaning, as Gijs also already mentioned, temperature in the house, a certain amount of domestic hot water, and also the ventilation is part of that. So we have moved quite a bit in the food chain, more or less, and have become quite closely attached to these customers in the end.
Okay, and tell us a bit about what the proposition with ground source heat pumps is in terms of guaranteeing the performance of that. Help our listeners understand this specific proposition and what you're doing and how it works.
Yeah, you already correctly mentioned ground source heat pumps, because that is the type of heat pump we use most for now for these heat as a service contracts. And one of the main reasons being that, maybe one of them being that we have quite a good product in that area, but also that the system is very robust. So the influence of the user is, of course, there, but limited. And the biggest example of that is that the unit is able to make 60 degrees Celsius domestic hot water without electrical elements. So using a bit more does have an effect, but not as much. So restricting the risks, which is, as you mentioned, very important in these things, is also done by choosing the right products to do that.
Okay, so it's ground source product is the easiest in terms of managing those risks. If you did this with an air source heat pump, do you think that model still works? It just gets a bit harder for you to manage these risks?
It could still work, of course, but the influence of the user might be a bit bigger. And since if you start these models, you want to be able to handle the risks, then starting with a ground source heat pump is more easy. And of course, the heat pump itself is part of the solution. As Kate already mentioned, we started doing this about 6 to 7 years ago now, I think, in new build. And there was also quite a lot of control about the insulation of the house and all those kind of parameters. So then the solution as a whole is quite robust. And if you then also have influence on solar panels and which ones are used and how good they are and on which side of the house they are, et cetera, then all in all, the risks are quite low. And in terms of risk, we also have the benefit of being the manufacturer. So we don't buy these products in most cases, we make them ourselves. So there the chain, the food chain and the added of margin is pretty overseeable. And that means that if for some reason a risk would become valid, then we have a short chain which results in the fact that our cost prices to solve it are relatively low.
Okay, and how I asked Heist about data and connectivity, how are you, can you tell us a bit about how you're using data to manage that performance risk or to guarantee the performance of the heat pump?
So I think this is pretty similar to what Kaiser also mentioned. So we now have for I think 10 years now quite a few ground source heat pump in our monitoring system. And as you can imagine, the on one end, the behavior of the people living in the house is quite important, but also the behavior of the ground source is very important. And because of the fact that we now have quite a lot of data, also over years of these ground sources, that enables us to actually maybe increase the risk a bit, but based on the data, it's all within limits. By withdrawing more power from those ground sources, putting more houses on one ground source, those kind of steps we can make based on the data.
Okay, and Heist talked about the experience of the Thun smart thermostat, and Eneco can leverage a lot of that experience in terms of data optimization, data science. For a product manufacturer, I think our experience, Kate, is that's not normally a core capability of a product manufacturer.
No, it's one that most are looking at more and more. But yeah, I think they're coming into the game a bit behind. Some of the energy suppliers have probably been ahead in that respect, with thermostat manufacturers. But certainly manufacturers catching up. Manufacturers catching up now.
Yeah, so I think for a company like Eneco, I think it's logical that they can have quite easily a broad penetration into the market. To get data like this, logically, for us that might be a bit less wide, let's say, that experience. But in all the houses we have been equipping with our products, we have this data. And what is quite nice and good to see, or interesting to see, is that we can are also able to see the relation between temperature setting in living rooms with, for example, certain types of ventilation. Do you have heat recovery or not? Do you have low temperature heating or not? You will actually see the effects on how a homeowner sets its thermostat. That's very interesting data.
So Albert, have you built a data science team, or have you had that through the wider group that you talked about earlier on?
Yeah, so within the innovation team, we about 25% of the people working there is working on data collection, databases itself, monitoring systems. And part of those people are also working on analyzing the data for future developments. On the commercial side of our business, we also have people who actually use this data, for example, for service purposes. The FTEs working on that kind of activities has been growing quite fast over the last couple of years.
Okay, so you're building that organically within your team. I'd like to open up the discussion a bit now to look at the differences between new buildings and retrofitting electric heating systems in old buildings. Kate, you alluded to this challenge earlier on. Yeah. Can you give us the feeling of the scale for retrofit against new build?
Yeah, definitely. It's something that we look at quite closely in our heat research, because as you say, there's different opportunities and different challenges if you look at new build where it's quite, it's often quite clear kind of what the insulation levels are, how's the PV been designed. You can understand the thermal dynamics of the building a lot better, and it's
the heat distribution system.
Things like that. Whereas coming into retrofit, obviously there's potentially more challenges, and I think you talked about those in one of the previous podcasts, John, in terms of making sure the insulation levels are good and the distribution's all set up so that you can use high efficiency electric like heat pumps. And in terms of the different sizes, I mean, if we across the five big heating markets that we tend to focus on at Delta, so Germany, UK, Italy, France, Netherlands, we've got maybe 500,000 new build homes being constructed a year. If you look at the existing housing stock, we've got over 100 million existing homes that don't use electric heating at the moment. So really big difference in terms of numbers.
Yeah, okay. So in that context, Hyson, Albert, either of you, both of you, how do you see retrofit compared to new build? New build thesis to start in, can you take these sorts of solutions, these service models into the retrofit market?
I think for the future it's possible, but for now we focus on new build because new build is well insulated. We have calculations about the heat demand of the house, so we focus on new build. That's the low hanging fruit, and later we will make shift to retrofit houses and existing building. But for now we focus on new build because it's easier, and for a pilot like with a promise like comfort as a service, which is quite a big promise, we need a home with well calculated heat demand and well designed insulation.
Yeah, it's a logical place to start.
How about you? Yeah, for us as a company at this point in time, we are at least trying to move from new build, not that we don't do that anymore, but also to extend our market to retrofit. But key in that is that the upfront costs need to be as low as possible to make it an attractive offer. So that means that it's really project based. So social housing, and not just somewhere one house, but small areas with, for example, 100 houses or something like that. Preferably with houses which are all more or less the same. Because the thing is that risk is key in this whole discussion, is that you need to keep the risk as much down as possible. And that means that if you have quite a lot of houses which are more or less equal, then you can spend the effort of making a good inventory upfront once, and then make it possible on all these houses. And if you would do that on a one by one basis, that would be, for now at least, close to impossible. But yes, we are trying to reduce prices upfront and then step into that retrofit market.
So again, I can understand very well the logic of new build and then retrofit on a project basis, as you described. And you see this model ever working with one by one retrofits in private housing?
At this point in time, that's still very, very difficult. Will it at some point work? I guess yes, but we need more experience, maybe some slightly different products as well. So that's yet to come.
And we need a higher gas price.
I guess it will help.
That will help.
The economics, tilt the economics a little bit,
Definitely. Sorry to interrupt you there, Heist. I was just going to say, both of you, with what you've got at the moment, you must be gathering so much useful data in terms of what user demands are, in terms of how the houses respond to the heating systems. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of that can hopefully feed into helping to develop something in the future for retrofit once you've gathered the data and kind of in the new build to start with.
Yeah, I think that's part of the solution if you also want to move to retrofit on a one-by-one basis. So we now should first get the experience in social housing with quite a lot of houses which are more or less equal, see what happens, take into account the risks and manage that, and then make steps based on the data.
And also based on new technologies. So heat pumps are getting better and better. So the temperature is going up every year. because in the Netherlands, the heating, the radiators are designed for 90 degrees, and a heat pump is most of the time working to about 50 or 60 degrees. So that's a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're taking that technology risk, you need to understand that that technology needs to work, and you need to have the level of comfort with its operation.
Having said that, we don't want to move to too high temperatures, supply temperatures, too easily, because if you need them, then you should start to put your money in insulation and those kind of things first.
Okay. Now, as always, time is getting the better of us in these podcasts. So it's time to bring out the Talking You Energy crystal ball. And today I want to set the dial to 2030, so 10 years away. Kate, you mentioned at the beginning that the Dutch market is predominantly gas at the moment. We're starting to see more electric. But if you look at all the heating installations that are going in the Netherlands, electric is still, 10%, 15%? Something like that.
A bit below 10 at the moment, actually. We estimate around 8%.
A bit below. So about 8% of all heating systems being installed in the Netherlands at the moment are electric. If we look to 2030, the question is, what proportion of these heating installations will be electric, either fully electric or partially electric, maybe a hybrid? So I'm going to ask each of you to take to share your view of what that number or range or approximate level will be. Kate, I'll start with you.
Sure.
Where would you see it by 2030?
So by 2030, it's not that far away, actually, when you think about it, only 10 years. But we can do a lot in that time. I think by 2030, we're going to be looking at around a quarter of all sales that are heating appliances going in are going to be fully or partially electric. And that's going to be, that's assuming that the majority, but not all of new build are going to be electric. And I'd say about a fifth of sales into existing homes are going to be electric by 2030.
Okay, very clear. Thank you. Thijs, how about yourself?
Yes, I think energy transition is a very, very difficult, and every transition goes slower than expected. I'm in the middle of the transition. I'm a leader in the energy transition. But I have a different ambition, but I also have a realistic view on it. My ambition would be 60 to 70%, but I'm afraid in 10 years, we're only on about 15 to 20%. And there will be a difference because we also have hydrogen, gas, and there are other options than just electrical heating. So I would say realistically, would be 20%, but my ambition is much higher.
I like the ambition. And Albert, how about you?
About the ambition or my guess?
either or both.
Yeah, so I don't think Gijs and I differ much if you talk about ambition. I think that the biggest problem with this estimation is that in about 10 years from now, we will be, I hope at least, more or less at a point in time that things should be picking up quite quickly. So I can imagine that from, let's say, 2028 to 2035, things will be picking up very rapidly. So moving 1 year back or forth can mean quite a bit of change. I hope we will reach the numbers Kate mentioned. So 20% in the retrofit market, I think that would be very good if we enable that at that point in time. But then if we want to reach the targets we have for 2050, then we should be running like hell to make that happen.
Well, I think you've all got similar views. And if we're to hit our carbon targets, we're in a hurry. But the only way to get there is through the innovation that Albert and Heise, you both described and shared today on the podcast. So fantastic to hear about what you're both doing. Wishing you both the best of luck and success as you take it forward. Kate, thanks for sharing your views on the Netherlands and putting it in the European context. And as always, thank you to everyone listening for joining the podcast. We hope you found our little trip to the Netherlands of interest. And I'm sure we'll be back there again soon. So thanks, guys. Thanks, Albert. Thanks, Kate.
You're welcome. And,
thank you for having me.
And look forward to welcoming you back for the next episode. Goodbye.
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 If you're as passionate about the energy transition as we are, then please keep in touch. You can follow us and me on Twitter, LinkedIn, or subscribe to the podcasts on your chosen podcast platform. If you like the podcast and like sharing, then please do rate us. And to listen to archived episodes, to read transcripts, and to see the latest Delta EE insights, then please visit www.delta-ee.com.